Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where in the world you are, what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, I'm not exactly sure what we've got to talk about because it doesn't seem to be much has happened in recent days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did our pre-transfer deadline podcast where we were quietly confident that Everton would be stronger. Yes, we were going to lose Illiman and Dye, but hopefully, you know, we thought we were going to get Richarlison, and the only fly in the ointment was the asking price, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But somehow, from that Sunday to 11 p.m. on Tuesday evening, Everton managed to do something that I don't think any other club has done previously, and that was significantly weaken their options. Reducing the size of the squad, whether it was deliberate or not, is neither here nor there. The fact is that we had four players leave, and a couple arrive, and a player walk out at the last minute, walk away from the deal at the last minute for whatever reasons. I mean, I was staggered watching it kind of unfold. And I found myself thinking on Wednesday morning, waking up to the realisation that we have got one bona fide or out-and-out striker in Tierno Barry. We've got one recognised left-back in Vitaly Mykolenko. And we've got, with no disrespect to him, a makeshift right-back in Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Because I don't think it's his preferred position. It's a position he's kind of grown into. It made me think, we are three injuries away from potential disaster. If Barry gets hurt, or Mykolenko, or Maitland-Niles gets hurt, where's the cover? I mean, one fullback on either side. We've let Adam Asnew go out on loan to Malaga. I hope that they've got an immediate recall clause in that loan deal in the event that Mykolenko were to get hurt and we needed cover at left back. Is the club expecting that if Maitland-Niles is not going to be the starter at right back, then it's going to be Perm one of three from Merlin Roll, Jake O'Brien and Jimmy Garner? I mean, it's just, I was quite honestly staggered. And if we'd recorded this on Tuesday night, or, you know, kind of late Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, it would have been pretty X-rated, I think, with language. But dearie me, how on earth did the management and this transfer committee manage to weaken us? I mean, what planet are they on? I just don't understand how. I mean, if it was one person and one person alone, you could say he'd had an aberration. He'd been caught out. You know, he was out of his depth. He didn't know what he was doing. He was given far too much responsibility. Blah, blah, blah. But this is a group of people, three or four or five people, including the CEO. And I just don't understand how they managed to weaken us at a time when every man and his dog in football, and we've known it for years, let's be honest about it, we've needed to strengthen, we've needed to improve the quality and depth of the squad. And what they've managed to do is rob us of depth and not improve the quality. I mean, that's I guess that's debatable in some areas. You know, you could say, well, the midfield's a lot stronger. With the addition of Grealish coming back on loan, and the addition of Hayden Hackney and Norgaard as and when he's fit. But overall, what had the potential to be kind of a 7.5, maybe even an 8 out of 10 for the transfer window, ended up at a 4, and I think many people would see it as less than that. I was just staggered, shocked, disappointed, and angry.
Paul?
I think I share much of Andy's
Same.
views on that. What I don't quite understand, well, I'll get into it in a bit more detail in a few minutes, but what I don't understand is why we always end up in a position where we do our business so late in a window, and then when things go wrong, there's no time for recovery. Everybody knows that any particular transfer is not done until it's done, and to be in a position where you sell one of two strikers that you've got on the basis that you believe you're bringing somebody else in, and then you find out at 11:30 on the final day of the transfer window that player's not coming for reasons unknown, even though he'd been at Finch Farm for many, many hours. It just seems to me a ridiculous way to run a business. And I think, who's to blame? Is it the owners? Is it the CEO? Is it the transfer committee? Is it David Moyes? Or is it a combination of everything? I don't know because that wasn't in the room, but it needs a serious look at. Sorry, George.
No, not at all, darling. The only thing I can add that neither of you have said is that consistently over the podcast we've done since the last season ended, you've said that the non-appearance of any of the Friedkin people at Hill Dickinson is something to do with them not wishing to harm their corporate image, that what's important to them is that, they look like good business people. This is the bit that baffles me. Business people look a business. Any business person who was lining up a deal with the Friedkin Group would look at what happened to Everton in a very simple way, in a transfer window way, and go, these people could not organize a piss up in a brewery. I am not sure I wish to do business with them. And so, apart from all the stuff that we all felt about, our team and our squad, and Moyes with 18 players in the room, for goodness sake, that was the bit that astonished me. That because I took it as read what you said, that they're very concerned about their global image. They screwed their global image. They look like amateurs, idiots, incompetent, and mean too. Because somewhere along the line here, we haven't bought anybody because nobody's had any money. You can't buy till you sell and die, and we might ring fence that money to pay Burnley. It's that's the bit that really astonished me, that their reputation must have gone into the toilet, and I can't see it coming out, and I wish they'd go away, really.
One thing that gets me is the almost universal agreement from pundits and journalists, never mind fans, that we let Ondaye go at less than market price. And we talked about this at, last Sunday,
You're
that,
not tough, Andy.
well,
You know.
that's what I'm saying. And it comes down to, you use the word incompetence. I mean,
was on a contract with 3 years. He said he never wanted to play for the team. He played every pre-match, every pre-season, and the two games we played, the three games we played, beg your pardon. They should have gone, that's the price. If you don't pay it, you can't have him. He's staying. And if he wants to sulk, he can go in that cupboard over there.
Exactly.
Well, Everton don't have that kind of balls, it seems.
If only it was that easy, with the greatest of respect. This is where the direction from the owners comes in. And I'm going to lay the blame. I'm going to lay the blame firmly on the owners for this.
Just before you do, Paul, can I just read something?
Yeah.
From the 19th of December, 2024, a message from our new executive chairman, Mark Watts.
Yeah.
And it read, "We are proud to be the new custodians of your club. Together, we will usher Everton into a new era, one that is marked by ambition and professionalism. As stewards of Everton, we look forward to showing our commitment to the club through actions, not words." Has there ever been such a hollow statement?
Well, it's just, okay, I'm not here to defend the Freakins, but I suspect when that was written, they meant it. And to be fair to them, when they first came to the club, they did everything that they needed to do to stabilise the club, and they acted in a much more professional manner than anybody had acted for many, many years at Everton Football Club in terms of sorting out the finances, in terms of sorting out what was still left to be done with the stadium. They did an excellent job on that.
Okay.
So they demonstrated that their ability to perform well in difficult circumstances. I have to give them credit for that. And I think when Marcus Watts wrote what he wrote, or probably written for him, they actually believe that. I think what has happened, I'm going out on a limb here, what has happened is that they've discovered a number of things about running Everton Football Club. It is much more difficult to get Everton to a more competitive position than they or their advisors had ever imagined before they bought the club. Right. So they came into the club with a view that they had to do certain things, sort out the finances, provide a certain amount of money going forward, appoint a manager like David Moyes for mid-table stability, security, etc. But the move then from that position to, say, qualifying for European football, which is when the revenues start to increase and you can really start to crank up the investment, mm-hmm. would be a lot easier than it's proven to be. I suspect, had our form not fallen away at the end of the season, had we continued to be in the position that we were in at half time against Sunderland, we'd probably be having a different discussion than we are now. I think what's changed is that the Freakins, A, understand it's now much more difficult to compete in the Premier League than they thought it would be, and B, it's much more expensive to compete in the Premier League than they thought it would be, and C, finally, that Everton Football Club's ability to generate the types of revenues that they anticipated is much more difficult than they thought it would be. And a combination of all of those factors, with possibly the idea that they're going to invest money in sports franchises, more money in sports franchises in the US, means that Everton hasn't been given the attention or the funding that it needs. Therefore, just going back to the comments about Ndiaye, Ndiaye acted entirely professionally. He told the club that he no longer wished to stay, that he wanted, wanted to move on, develop his career at a quicker rate than he thought he could achieve at Everton. And that's
100% correct.
Yeah.
That's an opinion. It's probably the right opinion. But he remained committed to the club while he was here, and he trained well, trained professionally. and he did everything that might be expected of a player in his positions. With regards to the valuation, it was an absolute necessity for Everton to sell Ndai, not for regulatory reasons, but just because the Freakins weren't going to fund any other developments in the transfer window. Right. Had we not made that sale, so we were in a position where player wants to leave, has expressed the fact that he wants to leave, and the industry, knowing that Everton were in a position where really they had no option but to sell. I know that they didn't get any offers in the UK, and he wanted to stay in the English Premier League anywhere near what we managed to sell him for. What we managed to sell him for was the highest offer that we had. We had one offer from overseas that was higher, mm-hmm. only marginally higher, and he didn't want it because he wanted to stay in the English Premier League. So given the circumstances, we probably got as good a deal as we could get for him. Because whilst we as fans have really enjoyed him being here, and you know, he's a great player on the eye, and he was popular amongst all the staff and the players and everything else, the raw data doesn't support a valuation much higher than what we actually ended up getting for him. That, and that is the reality of the situation. Now, he might go on and score, you know, two or three times the number of goals, scored four goals last season, two or three times the number of goals this season. But the fact is, at Everton, his figures didn't justify any higher figure than the figure that we got.
Right.
Fair enough.
I don't think we can be, of all the various aspects of the transfer window, I don't think we can be too critical of what happened with regards to Ndai, if the truth be known. There's plenty of other areas where we can be very critical.
Okay, let's move on to them areas then. Let's cut to the chase. I accept what you say, Paul. You know, if there was no other offers and we had to sell to finance any potential incomings, and Cities was the only offer on the table, we were hogtied. We had to take it.
Absolutely. And where we failed is what I've written about since the window closed, is that we had a system whereby we have a manager that has a certain opinion as to what type of players he wants. He wants experienced players, slightly older players than the so-called committee, or it's not really a committee, it's just a group of people who've got various responsibilities within the scouting and recruitment of players.
Right.
And we had this impasse between them suggesting players which have got lots of potential, slightly, you know, cheaper to buy, cheaper to pay, the wages are lower than the players that Moyes wanted. And something that the owners could see future value in. That was their plan. Moyes had a completely different plan. As we know, Moyes going for established players, more expensive. But he believed, you know, they're the types of players that he prefers. And we had this impasse throughout the whole of the summer, which is why we ended up scrambling around and failing at the end of the transfer window, whereby players are being offered to Moyes, and you know the club has to go to the manager at the end of the day and say, we're recommending that we buy the following players. What is your opinion? And if he says, well, you can buy those players, but I'm not going to play them, what does the club do? Particularly in an environment where we don't have huge amounts of money to waste. So that ends up being up to the point where it becomes a compromise. That ends up just being a sort of, you know, a face-off. And I think that's what's happened over the summer.
And he took some responsibility for the fact that he's only got 18 people in a room with him.
I think he has to.
He has to, because consistently in every press conference I've seen, he has banged on, and you knew what he was doing, going, we need more players. And here we are with less.
What he was saying was, we need more players, and those players are the players that I want,
Yeah,
as
quite.
against we need more players. And the club or the owners, I don't know which, were saying, well, hang on a minute, that's not how we want to run our club. We want to do this, you want to do that, and we're ending up doing nothing. In the meantime, we're disposing of players that we'd plan to dispose of. So on the sales side of the equation, we did reasonably well. I don't think there's any criticism of what we got for Ndiaye, as I just explained. And that side of the transfer window functioned as we expected it to do so. Where we failed is on the purchase side, and that's been, it's consistently been Everton's problem for years and years and years. It just so happens that this year is a problem for different reasons. In the past, it's been a problem because we haven't had consistent recruitment policy, or we haven't had the funding, or we haven't been able to attract players because they take one look at Everton. You remember Lukaku laughing at us when he was asked, was he going to go back to Everton? And not a chance. And okay, that was nearly a decade now ago now. But we've been run so poorly for many, many years that that was one of the barriers to recruitment. That's less of an issue now. But if the barrier is we've got a group of people saying we want to buy this type of player, and these are our suggestions, and we've got a manager who says, actually, you know what? I don't want those people. And if you buy them, I'm not going to play them because this is my preferred method of playing football with these types of players. Then you end up in the position that we ended up in. And we end up scrambling around. And, had the transfer gone through on the final day of the window at sort of 11 o'clock, we'd still have the problems at full back, but probably think, with what we've done in midfield, we've got a better quality striker, then we probably wouldn't be looking at each other, scratching our heads and thinking, how are we going to get through the next season? But now we're in that position.
No question about it. And the $64,000 question is, what can be done? What should be done? What's possible? How are the people who will tip up on Sunday and who are listening to this, how are we supposed to find some hope out of this mess? Where is it? Is there any? Do we just batten it down now and go, well, we hope we don't get hammered by every. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know where you go from here.
I think the first thing we've got to hope is we don't take any injuries anywhere.
But that's
That's
not.
the first thing for me.
No stat going to support that, Andy.
No, I know.
You
I
know,
know.
and players get nervous, and we all know, the first thing you learn about playing football is if you're going in for a tackle, go in hard, because if you go in soft, you'll get hurt. And they all know that, and of course, nobody wants to get injured, but you know perfectly well you can get three in a game.
No, exactly. I mean, you would. I mean, there's other little things as well. Like you said the other day, with Beto having been sold, and good luck to Nobby at Fiorentina. Who comes on at between 60 and 70 minutes if Barry's getting tired?
It can only be Michael Keane, Andy. It can only be Michael Keane. He'll have to adjust to everything, and Tyrick George won't get starting position, and he'll get that job, unless Mr. Brennan, who looks positionally like that's where he wants to play, but has he got any weight to play there at all? No, but he is a goal hanger. He's positionally he's quite encouraging.
Well, the word coming out of the club last night was that we have sufficient options. Whether you agree with this or not is obviously why what we're debating. But with Brennan Johnson, with Tarik George, and with Barry, we've got sufficient options up front.
Right.
That is bollocks.
Well, but and
I
yeah,
think I would
but
have used the word speculative, but yeah, I'll go with what you said.
that's what the club's position is. And
Right.
it has to be the competition.
will we
Oh,
pick
sorry.
up somebody that's a free agent in the next few weeks? I don't
Well,
know.
they've said they're not going to go into the free agent market yet.
Why?
Yes. God
Why?
knows. But
I suppose it
Everybody
depends on.
knows it's a desperate situation. Who's available in the you don't have to pay anything for them? Anthony Marshall, Jamie Vardy.
Jamie Vardy. I don't know who else is available in the free agent market, bro. But for Everton Football Club to be potentially having to go to the free agent market after the transfer window's closed is nonsense.
It
It's
may be nonsense,
lamentable as well.
all that, Andy, but let's get practical. We've got 36 games to play to not get relegated. And as you say, three bad tackles, and now what happens? I can't see any reason not to examine who's available. I've never liked Anthony Martial, but he's a centre forward.
True, and
And
he always had the annoying habit of scoring against us as well.
let's get absolutely real. We all hope he has a purple patch and that he grows and grows and grows, and I can't see any reason why he wouldn't. No other P Premier League team would consider Tierno Barry. Not for a second. And, good luck to him, and I hope he scores hatfuls of goals, and I'm eating humble pie for the rest of the season. That'd be marvellous. But the truth of the matter is, we've all watched him play, and we've all hoped for him. And he's a very willing lad, and he is getting better. And if they play to his feet, that's his strength, not in the air. But he's not frightening anybody. And now that Ndiaye's gone, although we'll have to see what Grealish's fitness is like, we've got nobody who frightens anybody. And that is the bit that bothers me most, because I think that goes into the team. And the team knows that goals are going to be very, very hard to come by. And they've already played season after season after season since Lukaku left, frankly. Where's the goals coming from? Who's going to score the goals? It ain't going to be Nobby. It ain't going to be Tierno. And KDH is working his nuts off and doing really well. But I don't know. I just don't know how they do it.
Here's an alternative view, though, George. Given that both Barry and Beto didn't contribute a huge number of goals last season, are we likely to get more goals from other parts of the pitch with the transfer business this summer? And there's a strong case for arguing that yes, that would be the case. So I'm thinking that probably the club are thinking, are we materially worse off than we were last summer? And there's an argument for saying, sorry, last season, there's an argument for saying no from a goal scoring point of view. Would we be materially better off had we brought in an established number nine? Well, yes, quite obviously, and that's what we should have done, and that's where the big failure is. But if you took a step back and said, okay, with this squad and with the potential for more goals from midfield, are we in a better, the same, or worse position? I think you'd probably argue that we may be in a marginally worse position, but we're probably in a neutral position. If we can get, say, eight more goals out of midfield this season, then we've covered Beto's contribution.
We're coming back to, or we're at a stage now where we want the club to be
owned by somebody who knows what they're doing.
Well, no. I was going to refer. I'm going back in time, obviously, and maybe we shouldn't do this. But when we had Gary Lineker scored 40 goals in 40 games, and we didn't win anything. And the following season, we were champions again, and we had at least four players in double figures.
Both wingers.
Well, yeah, Sheed, Stephen, Sharpie. We had goals coming from every area, and it strikes me now that, with us only having Cherno Barry, and no offence to the lad, as you said, he's young, he's trying, he is getting better, and he is better on the ground than we thought he would be. We now need other areas of the team to contribute on the goal front. If Jack Grealish could score five, if KDH could score five, if Tyreek George can score two or three, and Brennan Johnson score three or four, the need now is that everybody else has got to step up to the plate and contribute. And if we can get that, then
It's an interesting exercise, isn't it? We've talked about this many times. I think you need to score 40 goals a season to stay in the Premier League. Yeah. You need 50 goals a season to be mid-table, and you need 60 goals a season to qualify for European football. Very, mm-hmm. very rough figures, but I think if you did the analysis, those figures would sort of reasonably stack up. So the question is, can we score between 40 and 50 goals this season? And, everybody's homework who's listening to this podcast, and our homework before the next time we speak, is to go away and work out how we score 50 goals.
Fair enough.
Well, I'll throw one more thing into there. When, Andy, goes down nostalgia alley, and quite rightly, to the days of Sheedy and Stevens, but they were members of a team that wanted to attack, that had a mentality that went, nah, don't matter what you do, we'll score more than you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That mentality is nowhere to be found at Hale Dickinson Stadium or in the Everton Football Club, nowhere. So the idea that we score 50 goals would be marvellous. And again, I'll be happy to cook the humble pie and serve it at half-time. But it's not going to happen. Not with that squad.
No. So then the alternative, and I know I'm digging myself a big hole here, is to do what we did 2004-2005. I think it was 2004-2005, when we were fifth and qualified for, or at least qualified for Champions League qualification. Yeah. We did so with a negative goal difference of minus one. Can we be, and this is where the argument falls down, can we be defensively so tight that actually scoring 40 goals is enough to get us at least mid-table?
But that's an hysterical argument to place in front of a club with one left back, no recognised proper right back. I watched an interview with the boy that we just brought, who went, no, I don't like playing fullback. I'm a midfielder by nature.
Yeah.
So, and Tarko, with the greatest respect, and I loved his goal at Bournemouth, is not fast enough or actually strong enough in this league to hold that position, and he's been made skipper. So, and although we have got easily the best goalie in the country, and he must inspire confidence in people, and until you start Jake O'Brien and form a partnership in the middle that's going to last for as long as Mountfield and Ratcliffe and all those kind of things, No, Paul, no chance. Manchester United will come on Sunday and they will go, right, attack down the left, please. Get the ball out to Rashford as fast as you can. Knock it past the fullback, whoever it is, even if all three of them playing, and get to the corner and swing it in. And, you know, chaos will follow.
I suspect you're right. I'm just trying to present an argument.
Well,
because somebody in the football club is going to have to be sitting there thinking, well, this is the hand we've dealt ourselves. What do we do now?
Absolutely, Paul. And there must be. I mean, my heart goes out to the people who are left, the people who have to pick up the shit that's been left. And, you know, we could apportion blame and we could be right about the blame or wrong about the blame. Still and all, people are going to pay out 40, 50, 60, 70 quid to watch us on Sunday. And somehow those individuals have to lift themselves into a team mentality that can take on an entirely average United team and pace them and go, oh, my God, you know, there's hope here. Because that's what's so missing from Everton. You kind of feel where's the hope? Where's the, you know, I mean, I think you're both right. If that boy from Monaco had come and not been dickered about by the medical team or whatever excuse that was, we would feel a great deal better because we'd think, yeah, that's a threat. He's 25, he's rapid, he's big, and he scores goals. We'll suck up the fullback nonsense. But it's not the case, and we're toothless. And that was an excerpt from The Prophet of Doom by...
It's hard not to
and be realistic, that's
think
all.
The worst, yeah, I know.
And, you know, I believe that the manager has got pissed off with Jake O'Brien, who's gone public and said that he's disillusioned with Everton. That means to me Moyes won't pick him. And, you know, if the football club is being run on those lines of I don't like you, I don't trust you, I don't want you, you piss me off, I don't like you. And of course we're human beings, those things happen. But really, really professional people go, well, that's what I feel about it. You'll never know. I won't show you.
So, again, I'm just throwing ideas around here. We know that David Moyes is the type of manager that loves adversity. Will he not be getting everybody together and saying, okay, this is what we've got for the next 16 games before the next window opens?
I was just going to say the same thing. Now, you know, now's the time. The backs to the wall mentality. Things have to be put aside. You know, if Jake O'Brien has gone public and said he's disillusioned, you know, rightly or wrongly, at this minute in time, the club needs that dressing room to be as one, not splintered.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one person can do that, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the manager.
Well, it's both the manager, but it's also down to the individual players, isn't it?
If
Jake O'Brien wants a fantastic career ahead of him, and he still wants to move from Everton, be it in January or be it next summer, then he's got to go out there and prove to whoever his next club is going to be that he's the type of player that, okay, he's expressing an opinion as to his current club, but just as Ndai did.
Yeah.
Be professional about it. If you're selected, go out and play.
The consummate professional about it.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything in his character that suggests that he wouldn't do that.
O'Brien?
Yeah.
No, there isn't. But is there in Moyes? Do you think Moyes can pick him? I don't.
If I was Jake O'Brien, or if I was his advisor, I'd be saying to him, I don't know if the manager's going to pick you or not, but when you go to training every single day,
give them a problem.
You train like the hardest you've ever trained. You do everything that you possibly can so that he can't not pick you. And that's the only solution to the position the club finds itself in now is that everybody who has got any form of responsibility to the club in terms of its performance on the pitch
100%
has to step up its game, their game, to a level beyond which they've done previously. We are in, you know, an invidious position. It should never have happened. The owners have to take some responsibility. The recruitment structure has to take some responsibility. The executive team have to take some responsibility. But if I was in the dressing room or if I was at Finch Farm, I would be saying, you've just got to put that to one side. We are where we are. And now everybody, it's up to everybody now to do their absolute best and to prove that even in these circumstances, each of you as individuals, never mind, forget the team ethic for a minute, each of you as individuals will come out of this season in the knowledge, first of all, that you did everything that you could do, and also in the knowledge that everybody in the football industry recognises what you've done in the circumstances in which you've done it. And the players will either do that or they won't do it. And those that don't do it don't deserve to be at the football club and should be moved on. And those that do, thank you very much. Congratulations. You are what we as fans look for and believe are representative of our great football club.
That's it. Henry the Fifth, isn't it? Yeah.
I put it in those terms, George, but it is, yeah, it's the same argument.
We few, we happy few.
Yeah.
It has to be. I'm really looking forward to Moyes' press conference today to see, you know, what his attitude is, because he would have a right to be angry. And I hope he's got, you know, the humility to go, I got some things wrong as well. But, you know, it's not important. What's important is what you've just said, is that, you know, for the people who actually put money down to watch us, they need to see, you know, proper concentrated best you can possibly do.
In terms of Moisey having the right to be angry, now the transfer window is shut. I think he forfeits that right. He's got to knuckle down and get on with his job, and that is finding the way to get this
it's a press conference, Andy, and he will be asked. You know, I'm just curious to see what responsibility he takes when he's asked. You know, you're absolutely certain they're not. You know, not the questions from the press are going to be about what the fuck was that, mate.
Well, I mean, far be it from me to tell Moisey how to handle his press conference, but he needs to say, guys, we are where we are. Much as I don't like that phrase, we are where we are, this is where we are, and this is how, you know, we have all got to find the way to make it work until such time as we can do anything different.
100%, Andy, yeah. Yeah, it's good.
You know, there's no point dwelling on what happened on Tuesday night. What's important is what happens on Sunday afternoon and every game going forward.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the hardest thing of all is that after Tuesday, when the whole world was laughing at us, that's the whole football world. You know, I said to you yesterday that the Independent ran a kind of school report on it, each club. And some got A and some got C minus and we got D. And that's absolutely correct. And the players must know that. And so the idea that out of this mess, someone, the 18 players and their manager and their coaches, have to find a positivity that, you know, they couldn't have been planning on looking for, even, is a big ask.
It's a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
There is, of course, another angle to this.
Oh, good.
And that is, if we no longer have faith in the Friedkins as owners of our football club, the last thing that we can afford to do or be in is a position where there's a threat of relegation. Because that will impact the Friedkins' ability to sell the club. we will not be sold if we are considered by a future buyer to be a club that is in danger of relegation,
Right.
or we will be sold at a much lower price and at a price that is probably not acceptable to the Freakins. So if we want to say thank you very much to the Freakins for doing what they did, we're disappointed in the sense that they haven't done what the chairman said they were going to do. But if we want to move on from this, we have to have our club in the best possible position it can be in. And that means that everybody who's got responsibility for it means that we're nowhere near relegation. And it's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous that here we are in 2026, 27, to talking about this. With all the stuff that we've been through in recent years, the last decade or more, I never believed that we'd be back in this position. But here we are, here we find ourselves in this position again. But we have to suck it up and just get on with it and do more and do better than we've ever done before.
And just something that has only just remind I've just reminded myself of. Had the Freakins had their way, we wouldn't have Harrison Armstrong. So what does that say about them? And also, I don't know. That moment where it felt like the fans said to the owners, no, pal, no, that's not happening. And the owners went, crikey, we've misjudged something here. How could and in what way should, I asked this last week, didn't I, the fans make their next move? What should the fans demand now? Now the transfer window is closed. Now we've got a, like you say, 16 games to the next supposed opportunity. We can all wander around going, we have done. I was looking at some pictures of the fans' movement to oust Bill and Denise Barrett Baxendale and all that mess. Farhad, we've done it. It's been done, and we have to. It feels like we might have to do it again. But mean, what do you think the banners that the fans might bring to the stadium on Sunday could say? We're right behind you. We're 100%. We're thrilled to bits that, you've left us in this position. I doubt it myself, but I just don't. I don't know what. I don't know what the way forward is. I can see you're right that it is now down to Moyes and bunker mentality. That's going to be so hard to sustain. And good luck to all of them and all of us, because we're going to have to sustain it as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, the burden comes back to the fans, because
All of them.
if both the club and the team struggle as a result of the actions that we've just witnessed, then it is
Who
going to
suffered
be like it
more?
has been in the past. It's up to the fans to drag the club, drag the team over the line. And no doubt that's what most Evertonians will do. There will be people that are upset, obviously, and there will be some form of display as to what they think about the Freakins, no doubt. And I think people are entitled to do that. And I for one, would never criticize somebody for doing it, because if done it with previous owners. But at the end of the day, we will do what Evertonians do, which is do everything we can do to make sure that on the pitch we get the results that we need in order to stay and maintain our position as a Premier League club.
Sunday's podcast will be a hoot if we beat United 4-0.
Can't wait, bro.
Dream on, eh?
All right, should we call time now? And for people listening, apologies if this is a doom and gloom, but it's just a reflection of how we feel about where we are. And I hope people recognize that, we're trying to offer some explanations, but also some strategies in terms of dealing with the situation as we see it. So that's I can't say anything more, really.
Just one thing. Just, I
Yeah.
mean, but assuming, well, not assuming, when we come to January and another transfer window, who's going to power as to whether any signings are done in January, and B, who will make the decision on it?
Think that will depend
Because
upon who it
clearly this collective has failed, because as you said, if they're coming in with one batch of potential targets and Moisey says, well, you can buy them, but I'm not going to play them. So does that throw all the onus back on him? And would they therefore say, there's your budget, that's all you've got, and give him I don't know, a low ball figure?
I think
Hello.
it depends entirely on. Sorry, George, can
No, I was only going to say you've got to throw into that by the next transfer window, which he said many times he doesn't like the January transfer window, and he's
No.
not been saying that. He's the lame duck because his contract's coming to an end.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And of course, by the time the transfer window opens, we will know what kind of position we've got hopes of getting to, and hopefully it's not down among the dead men, backs of the
Yeah.
wall with Sean Dyche behaviour.
But we also may have new owners by then.
That
And
would be bliss. Thank you very much. Christmas.
that would give everyone a bit of a lift,
Well,
I suspect, depending on who it is, obviously.
depends on who the owners are, because we're as good at recruiting owners as we are recruiting on the
Yeah,
mines.
the track record's not great, is it?
It's not great, is it? But with the right ownership team in place, then everything's reset, isn't it? The need to have David Moyes, the need to have all of the transfer restrictions that we've had this summer might change under a different ownership group, and then we can then we can begin to look forward, as we might have done when the Friedkins first came in. But obviously that hasn't worked out.
That's what happens, isn't it? We're looking backwards to go, what went wrong? And it would be so nice to go, come on. Get United down here, stuff them. Who's next? Tottenham, roll them. But, that's not our bag for the moment. It doesn't feel like it is anyway.
No,
No, we
not at
are in
all.
that backs to the wall, as you said, bunker mentality. Let's hope it, well, let's hope it, let's hope we can adopt it in the right way.
Yeah. Okay.
Or adapt it in the right way, even.
Yeah.
Adopted that. Who cares?
See you Sunday, boy.
I'm gonna call time because we have to move on.
Right. Dave, see you
Everybody,
soon.
both of you, thanks very much. Everybody for listening. Thank you so much, and thanks for the response to last week's podcast.
Yeah, brilliant.
Which was fantastic. Really, really pleased to see how many people listen to us. I'm sure even more will listen to us this week. So, thanks everybody. Look forward to Sunday, and look forward to talking to you, my two Manchester United fans, my two Mancunian friends,
Watch your mouth.
about the Manchester result.
Look forward to it.
Yeah,
Yep.
thanks, Andy. Thanks, George.
Cheers,
Yeah.
Paul.
Cheers.
Bye,
Bye.
everybody.